The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, are you susceptible to the green-eyed monster? Are you envious of the homes others have, the holidays they enjoy, the working-from-home regime the employer allows, the Botox, the body beautiful, the whatever? Well, in an age of saturation social media, it's so much easier to track everybody's lives when it used to be only eyeing up the new car in the driveway next door and wondering where they got the money for that car. Well, I'm joined by Stephanie Regan, clinical psychotherapist and co-host of the Tough Love podcast. Comparisons are odious.
Yeah. Good morning, Pat. I think the point about comparison is that we can't get away from it. I think that's the first point. It's part of our makeup. It's how we survive. It's how we've, evaluated ourselves vis-a-vis others. It's a natural part of us. And I think the problem that's happening now is that we're getting a kind of a tsunami of opportunity to compare, where normally it might have been in your peer group or in your school class or in your college or in your workplace. But now there's a sort of a tsunami of possibilities where you can compare to everybody that you have even the remotest interest in worldwide, globally. So I think that's where the problems are coming in. I mean, we know from all this social comparison theory, we know that there are some pluses, and I'd like to put them there. And that is that cognitively, it is quite efficient to compare. If you're trying to work your way through a set of sort of detail to you, it is shown that comparing yourself to others is a kind of a cognitive shortcut. So that is, it's a useful way, if you like, an efficient way in our
well,
mind.
Socially,
to
you can see it, for
things.
Example, if there's a particular cohort, age cohort, and one or two of them start getting married, then the others are thinking, maybe it's a bit about time I got married too. And suddenly you get a whole welter of marriage. The same thing. They bought their first house or their first apartment or whatever. And suddenly they all say, oh, maybe it's about time I knuckle down and achieve that too.
Yes. Well, there's a kind of a contagion around that. But I think it's also, it's not always about comparing that. I think you see in that, often like our children, like yours, you know, they're at a particular age group. There's a kind of a tipping point there around 30 where they all start thinking the same thing. It's kind of interesting. And if you go back yourself, you know, there's I know at a certain point I talked a lot about the different decades. And in each decade, there is, there's a real sort of norm around what people start wanting at different points. You think you're very unique, but actually you're very similar to everybody else. So it's really just, I want people to think about, that comparison is something you can't get away from, but you really have to be careful that it doesn't become a demotivator for you. Like, we know that looking at people who are better than us, particularly if we can achieve those goals, is a motivator for us. But where it becomes a demotivator is where, if you're looking at this person and they're so much what you want to be, but you're not prepared to look at how they got there or what steps they took to get there.
Like a classic would be, look at someone.
An athlete, maybe.
She lost a lot of weight. Look at that. She must have lost, or he must have lost 20 kilos. How do they do that? And I'm feeling the same stodge around my waist.
Yes, but they've
can
taken
I do
really,
that too?
Yes, can I? Exactly. So it's a motivator at one level. I mean, and if you can look at the steps they have taken, we can learn from people like that. And that's where, all of the social media thing is as well. People are enjoying learning from each other. So there's a positive to that. I definitely see that. People are being told, even in the mental health space, they're getting lots and lots of information they would never get before. People they can follow. I think it's good. So I'm not negative around it, but you've got to be careful that you don't damage your own mood and your own sense of motivation.
You sent me a quotation, and one of my listeners has used exactly the same quotation, because they say, it's a great saying, one I try and remember daily, and it is...
Comparison is the thief of joy.
The thief of joy.
Yes, by Theodore Roosevelt. But I think it can be the thief of joy, but I think you can, what you have to recognize is that if you can compare yourself both up and down, that's an important point, because comparisons work both ways. So if you can, as well as looking upwards and saying, I want to be like that and I want to take the steps that will bring me to there, that's a positive. If, on the other hand, you want to look at that person, I often think of it like the comedian or the actor or the singer, and they're the overnight success, but they're not an overnight success. They've been working the small shows. They've been working up to this for probably 15, 20 years. You know that thing about the 20-year overnight success. So if you only look at the outside and the, if you like, the point in time when they've succeeded and they're at the top of their game, and you're not prepared to look at how they got there, I think then you're setting yourself up for the oh, I'll never make it there, I can't do that. That's not what we want. We want people to look and see how do people get there and what steps you can take. That's where the motivation is.
And also, I suppose that old term, count your blessings, is important.
Because that's the comparing down. That is really, Pat, where if you can have that nice, you know, sort of feeling of not so much that you're better than others, but rather this situation could be a lot worse. Look where I could be. Now, I've often, you know, we talk a lot about diets and all these things in the new year and the walking and people running and going to the gym. And I'm a great believer that you should say to yourself, I have done this. I could have done nothing. So here I am. I'm moving forward. So it's about being a motivator to yourself and being a little kind of mini coach.
Now, you also make the point that people often compare themselves to the best in class.
Correct.
And yet, if you were a tennis player, for example, and you're playing in your local tennis club, you don't compare yourself to Djokovic.
That's right. So you're comparing. And this has been shown, there's a good bit of research around this, that people feel these very negative feelings when they compare themselves with the absolute best. But if, on the other hand, if you get them to list the top seven, say, in that category, and you ask them then to compare themselves to number seven as opposed to number one, all of these negative points around, you know, feeling demotivated, a bit depressed, a bit helpless, these all left. So I think that's a really important thing for people to learn. And when you're, as I say, when you're making the comparison, instead of saying to yourself, look how great they are, instead say, what steps have they taken to get to there? That's how you break down the kind of image, if you like, a little bit for yourself. And if things make you feel, first of all, if you're too much on social media and it is making you feel down, you have to check yourself. Nobody can do this but you. You have to become, we all have to become smart and sensible around social media and all media, isn't it the truth?
Yeah.
It's feeding into us all day, every day. And especially, I suppose, there's an added factor here that when people are younger, comparison is even more important because when people are in their teen years and in their younger years, if you think about it, being part, their position in the peer group is hugely important. So they're going to compare even more so, and that's where the damage can be done. So parents can intervene in that way, I think, in explaining
that.
There's
a question about entitlement here. How do you manage someone who won't do the work to get what they want?
Yes, who doesn't see the point in doing the work. And I think that's where we're touching here. What do you do with that person? Well, I suppose I would look back at what messages they have got. Where do they think that could work? And where have they seen that work? And I suppose I'd slightly with them in a gentle way disassemble what they're thinking. I think that's what parents need to do. There's no point in giving out about it. I think it's about where, as I say, it's a bit like the operating system is slightly set to the wrong parameters. You have to kind of reset the parameters. So you need to go back a little bit and say, why are you thinking that? Why are you thinking you could get there without doing the work?
I mean, you have two people who enter a company at the same level at the same time, and then one of them gets promotion and there's a begrudgery on the part of the other. But the first one has gone off and done a night course in something else to elevate themselves slightly from the pack.
To work harder for it, As you say, the sense of entitlement, and that in terms of child rearing and all of that, that sense of entitlement tends to come from, not to blame the parents in any way, because we all know parenting is a hard business and it's an imperfect business. But sometimes if children get things too easy, and parents often can do that because maybe they didn't have those kind of things, they're inclined to give to the child what they didn't have. But the problem is the child gets the message that this comes easy without the work.
Question, what can parents do to give their children the confidence to know their own value and not compare too much?
I think you can't get away from the comparison, in my view. It's important. They are going to compare. You know, even in a group, you know who you're smarter than. Even in a classroom, kids know without anybody ever telling them that they are the third smartest in that class. Right?
Yeah.
They don't need anybody to tell them. They see who gets A's, B's and C's and they know where they are. So I don't think they're going to be able to stop that, but I think they should always encourage them to understand that everybody has strengths, everybody has weaknesses. And the reality is it's 80% application and 20% talent in most things. Maybe take sport out of that.
You talk about the social media problem and, you know, every experience has got to be Instagrammable.
Yeah.
Which really people will in a photograph their starter, their main course, the dessert, and put it out there. Why?
Why? Well, I think it's all about, you know, people like to tell their story. Everybody has a sort of a life that they're willing to share. Not everybody, of course. Some people, I mean, I have a lot of people who don't, but people do it to highlight what they're doing, and at a business level, we understand all of that. But I think that what you have to understand is it's a slice of life, and it's shined up. It's not reality.
Some of the texts come in. I'm quite comfortable with my unfit body, my Banjax car and threadbare rags. I don't care what the neighbours do or do not have.
Good for you. Mm. There's a person who has decided where they are, and maybe they've been, you know, maybe mature enough to see that where they are is okay.
Another one. Somebody else's success is not your failure.
Yeah.
Which I think is worth remembering.
It's an important way to look at it.
Another one, more important and more common, I suppose, the old saying, people buy something they don't need with money they don't have to impress people they don't like.
Mm. And sometimes, let's be honest, there's a hole inside oneself that people can fill with the shopping and the buying and all of that. And that's, so there are often deeper things, and obviously that's where I put my lens generally.
My favourite quote is, compare yourself to who you were yesterday, not who someone else is today.
That would be a quote I would wrap my arms around. Compare yourself to where you were yesterday, to your small incremental improvements in life, in work, in business, in your creative world, in what you want to do.
Another tester says, luck plays a large part in people's success, and that's probably true. You know, people have great talent who never make it because they never got the break.
Yeah. Okay.
Unfortunately, says another, the workplace is very often not a meritocracy, and that is why begrudgery takes hold. Of course, there is often misplaced begrudgery too, begrudging the person who deserves the success.
I'm not sure I completely agree with that. I think workplace is actually a meritocracy. It's a different kind of position. Of course, there will be people always who get favouritism or whatever. But you're working in a system where you have to not only deliver your work, but you have to also navigate all the relationships in work. And one of them is shining up the work that you do and making sure everybody knows about it. That's part of the system of work that people have to challenge, if you like.
My son is 11. He's determined to be an entrepreneur. He's been buying lollipops in bulk and bringing them into school, selling them at a profit. He doesn't want to go to college, but to go and start making money straight away. What do I do to encourage him one way or the other? That's from Linda.
Yeah, well, he's a long way to go with the lollipops. And I would say that business is and management and the skills and all of these things, the application. He's talking about making money, turning books on, you know, something. But there's a lot more to business. And I mean, you want to be very, very lucky. It's the Alan Sugar way, isn't it? But not everybody has that capacity.
Who was it who famously said, every time I see a friend succeed, a little part of me dies?
Mm. Well, that's the green-eyed monster, isn't it? That is definitely, and that's a kind of a sad place to be, where you cannot, in many ways, sort of celebrate, you know, what others achieve. Because I always feel when what other people achieve, in many ways, what it's showing you is you can kind of get something from their joy, if you like, from their success. There's a kind of a motivation in all of that. But not everybody can do that.
It depends, I suppose, how well they were that success, whether it's na-na-na-na-na or whether it's gracious.
Well, as they say, if you wear it lightly. Yep.
Stephanie, thank you very much for
thank
joining
you.
Us. Clinical psychotherapist and co-host of the Tough Love podcast, Stephanie Regan. I'm sure Stephanie would be interested in what we have for you now. Former UK Prime Minister Tony Blair has warned against the over-medicalising of life's ups and downs. Speaking on the Jimmy's Jobs of the Future podcast, the former Labour leader said there was a risk of mistaking challenges in life as mental health conditions. His remarks are actually in line with arguments being made by some Conservative MPs in recent years. Listen to some of what he said.
I think we have become very, very focused on mental health. Mm. And with people self-diagnosing on mental health, and I think we need a proper public conversation about that, because, I think it's a very, very difficult question. We're spending vastly more on mental health now than we did a few years ago. And it's hard to see what the objective reasons for that are. And if we're not careful, we get into a position where people, you know, life has its ups and downs, and everybody experiences those. And you've got to be careful of encouraging people to think they've got some sort of condition other than, you know, simply confronting the challenges of life. And so we need a proper public conversation about this, because you really cannot afford to be spending the amount of money we're spending on mental health and the ramp up of that.
What do you think, Stephanie?
Well, very interesting. This is the first time I've heard that. I'd say two things straight away. First of all, the reason you're spending a lot of money on mental health is because you didn't spend it before. Secondly, I would absolutely think he's going back in time to the kind of pull yourself together era. So I think he's completely wrong. I don't think that we over-medicalise, actually. I think that people try to sort of, and GPs try to give people many ways forward. Counselling is one of them, therapy is one of them, and that has really gained ground in the last 30 years as an effective way of dealing with it. And when things are difficult, then you have medication as well. I think that it's an unfortunate statement.
It's interesting, yesterday there was an article in the Sunday Times looking an eminent scientist who claims that a lot of the antidepressants don't work.
Yes, some of them don't work, and that's for sure. But I think that you can, I tell you, if you treat people, they do work. Like, the majority work.
All right, Stephanie, once again, thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
On News Talk.